So it's the 11th-7th of January, and spring is in the air, I think. I can feel it in my waters, as my nan used to say. Yes. I was, well, speaking of waters, the River Till behind our house has risen. And I can never remember whether it's when it comes up in January or April or whenever. It seems to be all over the place. And we ought to keep a diary as to when it comes up. But it came up on Monday this week. So I said to my wife, stick it in your diary, because she keeps a diary. So put it in there so we can compare it to next year and the year after, if we're still alive. So that's normally a good sign. Even though it's a winter born, it doesn't actually come up in the winter. It comes up sort of later in the winter. So that's risen. And I was out on the plains the other day, and I've been doing a project out there for years. And I go back to the same place. I go there quite a lot, and I photograph it. I've been photographing the changes up there. And the snowdrops have appeared. So there's snowdrops in this little wood already. On the 11th-7th of January. It's ridiculous. Well, it's too early.
Yeah, I mean, the snowdrops are the first sign, aren't they? But a welcome sign as well. I know a snowdrop location near me. I'll have to go and have a look later and see if they're there.
And I saw some crocuses the other day, some yellow crocuses.
Yeah. It's a bit early, isn't it?
It is.
It's kind of changed.
I know. What is going on?
Mind you, I wouldn't complain, because I put a really grumpy post on Twitter the other day about how I was totally fed up with this grey January.
Yeah.
So I put a picture of bluebells up.
God, that was a bit inflammatory, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know. Especially because when it is bluebell season, I get all excited about it. And by the end of the bluebell season, I'm usually complaining, saying I'm sick of the sight of the bloody things.
Sick of the sight of the things, yeah, absolutely. We'll soon be there.
Yeah. Okay, welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast. This is podcast number 29. In this podcast, we talk about things in Wiltshire that are hidden, relatively speaking. My name is Glyn Coy. I'm the podcast host, and with me, I have my podcasting partner,
Paul Timlett.
Paul Timlett.
Yeah, no hesitation, repetition, deviation.
You know, definitely
Paul Timlett.
People might get the impression we rehearse this. Quite professional, but
we don't rehearse anything.
No, we don't wing it either. Though we do research.
Yeah, a little bit. Actually, on that point, we've made this point before, but I'm getting sick of seeing us as the first thing on Google when you research something, and it's at some point we're gonna come a cropper here, but. We've got away
with
it so far.
Well, you're the person that was referenced on Wikipedia articles.
Yes, yeah, more than one there. And and how many more out there? I was telling my brother about this, and he said, do you spend all day Googling yourself? I said, no, somebody else told me.
Yeah, I do that. I've heard
what,
it.
You Google yourself?
Yeah, it's called a vanity search.
Yeah, that's right.
I do vanity searches just to double check that my name isn't cropping up somewhere it shouldn't be.
To check that you're still alive.
Yeah. I also vanity check Hidden Wiltshire. I put it in, for, you know, quotation marks, and put it into Google and see where it's cropping up. It's
actually it's quite funny sometimes. I do something similar because I'm interested to see where the Hidden Wiltshire stuff comes up. But I Googled myself some years ago, and I was just appalled at some of the things that came up. You think, where on earth has that dragged up from?
Yeah.
And how on earth does it appear in a Google search? So it's quite scary, really. But nothing too incriminating. That's what I'm looking for.
Hopefully nothing too sinister anyway.
Well, yes. It missed my devil worship activities somehow. So that's probably on
the
dark
net. That was you on Salisbury Plain the other night, wasn't it?
That's right, with my underpants on my head.
Oh dear, where are we going with this one?
Oh, I don't know.
So what have you been up to?
Well, as people on Facebook and the website will have seen, finally published the Tidcombe and Hippenscombe walk blog, which turned into something of a saga or an epic, whichever way you want to look at it. So as I said on the post, I think I went there five times in all. And part of the problem is trying to find a walk that is long enough to take in all the sites that, you know, you want to see. And as we've said before, Wiltshire Museum have asked us to put together a walk over that way. So they've got sites that they'd like us to visit on the walk. So it's got to be long enough to take those in, but short enough not to put a lot of people off. And some of the people from the museum who buy tickets for these walks are, you know, they're not athletes, put it that way. Trying to find the kindest words.
And we are,
yes. God, I've dug a hole for myself there. Actually, when we were walking, the last visit we made, Stu and I, so it was the final recce and the final retaking of photographs, and we were walking up this quite steep hollow way out of the little hamlet of Hippenscombe, and it's quite steep actually. And this was another place I was thinking, well, is there a way round this? And I was going up it, and I was absolutely knackered. We'd been walking all day and rewalking, and we didn't do the whole walk. We were just doing bits. And I tripped over a bramble or something, absolutely face planted in the mud. It's a bit like you did on Oliver's Castle.
I didn't face plant, I side planted.
Well, you, yes, that's right.
So I had mud all the way down one side of mine.
Yeah, whereas I had it all down my front. But I did feel very old and unfit then, because both of us were puffing and wheezing up this climb, and then I just went straight down. Anyway, I completely lost my train of thought. So we went, you know, we were trying to get the walk about the right length. Oh, that's right. And the other point was trying to find somewhere to park that wasn't going to cause too much disruption. So with the Wiltshire Museum walks, obviously we get, I don't know, maybe half a dozen cars, something like that. And the village of Tidcombe, I mean, if you're lucky, you might get a couple of cars in there. A lot of the time there's only one space left. Because it's just up a dead end, it's a narrow lane. So anyway, if you look at the blog, I've made a couple of suggestions for places to park. But yeah, that was a bit of a labour of love, that one. But earlier on this week, just thinking about sort of future walks and blogs, Stu and I sort of sat down in my kitchen over a coffee for a couple of hours, looking at the map and sort of thinking about ideas for walks. And I keep a list. I've got a little sort of list on my phone where I just jot down ideas. So we're trying to sort of put those together in some semblance of order and walk. So I've got four or five planned, varying in length from about 4 miles to 8, 9, something like that, but all over the county as well. So again, we've made this point what a big county Wiltshire is, and it would be good to go to some of the sort of further reaches of the county, yeah, right to the borders. So we've tried to do that and take in some completely new areas, certainly for Stu and I. And people listening to this will say, oh yes, of course I know that because I live there. But gonna start to pull those together, and we'll schedule some walks for he and I to do. What else? And of course, on Saturday, you and I are going to be doing a walk with the fantastic Bo Novak, who's follows the podcast. Not sure if he follows the Facebook group, but she's been really helpful in sort of putting together a walk in a particular area that we've been asked to go and look at by the lovely lady, Sarah Lucas, who did our family trees for us. Well, she did mine, and I know she offered to do yours. And she lives up in Scotland and hasn't lived down here for 30 years. She said, would you considered doing a walk for me and taking some photographs just to sort of bring back some memories. So, yeah, you and I and Bo will go and do that on Saturday, which is going to be brilliant. And that's quite a short walk, isn't it? It's only 4 miles.
Yes. Yeah. To be honest, I've been talking to Bo about doing this Winsley route for months.
Yeah.
We talked about doing it last year because she did a sort of a tour of Bradford on Avon for me.
Yeah.
So she showed me around all the sort of hidden parts of it, which I thought was absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
And after that, she said, you know, we should do Winsley because it's another area she knows quite well. So that was something we talked about last year, and then the year got away with us, and here we are.
So we're going to record some of that as well. I suggested that to Bo over WhatsApp that we record it, and she went very quiet. So I hope she's okay with the idea.
Well, we can record ourselves anyway, even if she doesn't participate.
Yeah, and we're
it's not for everyone.
That, and we'll do the photographs for Sarah up in Scotland, just as our thanks to her for what she did. And of course, the Quakers Walk blog is now up, so
yes,
that was good.
Yeah, I finally got around to writing that up. But what else have I been doing? I haven't been out so much, but I did do a talk at the Bratton Association.
And you caused a traffic jam all the way down that road, didn't you? All the way between Bratton and Eddington.
But it was well attended, let's just say. Yeah. Yeah, it was fantastic. It was a really good crowd, actually. Very interested. The people were very interested in the topic, which was about Wiltshire's blind houses. More on that to come.
But they've asked you back?
Well, they've asked if I'd be interested in doing another one in the future, so I must have.
Are they mad?
Hang on a minute, you know. I think the feedback is very positive, I'll have you know.
they thought they were in the pub, were they?
Well, it wasn't that bad. It was good. I think they were an engaged group of people. They're interested in the subject. They asked lots of questions, actually, which was always a good sign. But yeah, it was fascinating for me to go through that topic as well, which we'll talk about more later on.
Yeah. And the place where you did the talk, because I know last time we were wondering where it was. In fact, you didn't know where it was. Couple of days. So you obviously found it. So is it near the church or more near the visitor centre?
It's a bit hard to explain, actually. It was the Bratton Church Institute, which is, I don't know whether it's an old church hall or something. I'm just not sure what it is. But it's a building. It's got a sort of stone sign over the door, which looks quite old, Bratton Church Institute. And it's sort of an events venue. With no car park, so
God, hence the traffic jam.
Yeah, so I had to park on the main road by the shop.
Yeah, it's not a great place to park, is it?
But it was well attended. A lot of people managed to get over there. A lot of people from the village, obviously.
Yeah.
But some other people did come from far and wide.
So the next talk, will it be on a repeat of the same talk or a different subject?
No, different subject.
Okay.
So I've got to pull some other topic from the Hidden Wiltshire. Actually, I was thinking about doing something on William Beckford.
Oh, yeah, that would be good.
Because he's such a characterful person and there's lots of controversy there.
Yeah.
And scandal. So, yeah.
And I suppose the other possibility could be Hillforts.
Yeah.
Because I can remember you saying on a podcast last year that you were going to visit every hill fort in Wiltshire. How's that going?
Yeah, I was thinking of doing that, but then there's quite a lot of them that you can't get to. And there's a few that have been undiscovered. Well, not really in the record, but I'm following Tim Dore on Twitter. Tim is the farmer that built the long barrow over at All Cannings.
Yeah.
And he has put this public quest on this year that he is going to visit every INH hill fort in Wiltshire.
Oh, just but INH.
Yeah. Right. So, but he's going into the LIDAR maps and things like that and discovering new earthworks. He found one in Collingbourne Wood, which I think had been logged by Wiltshire archaeologists at Wiltshire Council, but it's not in the Historic England record or anything like that. and you wouldn't see it because it's covered in trees, of course, but you can see the shape on the LIDAR, and you went there and you can actually see the earthwork on the ground. So there are other things out there waiting to be discovered.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, I launched into another book the other day, and this one's not Wiltshire, it's up in the Scottish borders. But the guy there, in fact, the bit I was reading this morning, he was talking about the fact that Hillforts, or the name Hillforts, is probably a bit of a misnomer.
Yes, it is.
And particularly for, I'll use the word again, Hillforts, but for settlements, Bronze Age ones.
Yeah.
Where he was saying that you know, far more likely to be sort of ceremonial sites, and obviously places to shelter animals, as we've talked many times before about Nook Castle, which is an animal enclosure, people think. But he was talking about this particular hill fort near where he lives in the borders of Scotland. And, you know, it's Bronze Age. But he made the very good point that this particular camp, settlement, whatever it was, the area, it's on top of a hill and it commands all its surveys. But it's a really big area. And he was saying there's like 11 entrances, so through the rampart. So it's a multi-vallet construction, so multiple banks and ditches. But there are something like 11 entrances to it. And he made a very good point. How on earth would you defend something like that? He said it can't have been a fortified enclosure. You simply couldn't defend 11 entrances. And I was sort of reading this in the context of the book I've just finished reading about Uffington White Horse and Uffington Castle, the hill fort or whatever it is up there. And again, you know, the consensus is that construction up there was a place of ceremony and a meeting place for the people who lived in the valleys below.
Yeah, maybe we should get a Hillfort expert on.
Yeah, somebody actually knows what they're talking about instead of making it up.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I've got an idea in mind there. I know someone I could ask.
Didn't David Dawson suggest somebody?
I don't know if he suggested a Hillfort expert. He suggested the Sarsen expert, Katie Whittaker.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. But the person that comes to my mind is Miles Rossall, who's a published academic who's written books on the Iron Age and was actually my son's lecturer at Bournemouth University.
Oh, and, wow.
Was his sort of contact for his dissertation. So I know Miles via Twitter. I've actually met him as well. But he's he knows a thing or two about hill forts, let's just say, because he is the custodian of the Hill Forts Wednesday Twitter tag, the hashtag.
Hill Forts Wednesday.
Yeah, if you go to Twitter on a Wednesday and follow the hashtag Hillforts Wednesday, you see all these fantastic pictures of Iron Age Hillforts, the length and breadth of the country.
Oh, wow.
It's fantastic.
Well, this guy, this Scottish author, he's a historian, so he's talking with some sort of background on the subject, but he seemed to be saying that when it comes to Iron Age, they likely were, or more of them would have been,
yes,
defensive structures.
Yes.
Because then you get more, the rise of sort of warlords and,
yes,
you know, people who became sort of rich and powerful through farming and trading. And then, I don't know what it is with people, rich and powerful people, where they feel the need to force themselves upon the rest of us. And, you know, they lead the local tribes and they...
Yeah. I'll tell you what, though, one thing that puzzles me about Iron Age hill forts in Wiltshire is how close together some of them are. So,
yeah,
like Warminster, you've got Clay Hill, yeah, Battlesbury and Scratchbury all within, well, not quite spitting distance, but they can certainly see each other and chuck things at each other. And just made me wonder, are they all part of the same tribe or are they all chucking sticks and beating each other up?
But did they all, were they all used concurrently?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
They're all around the same Iron Age period, but Scratchbury's interesting because it's got some Bronze Age barrows on there as well. So it's obviously been used for thousands of years. And obviously in that landscape, you've got the long barrows, that, which are Neolithic, up on the plain that you can see from the hill fort. So, yeah, it's fascinating stuff, but we can only conjecture, really. We don't really know for sure. But my understanding as well is that the hill, by the time of the Roman invasion, the hill forts had really fallen into disuse. They were still there as a structure, and they were just dilapidated and weren't really used anymore. But I know that, speaking about Miles Russell, he discovered on an archaeological dig at Bournemouth Uni, what they call a place that they call Gyropolis, which was an Iron Age village. So I think when they discovered it, it was the first time they discovered such a large concentration of Iron Age roundhouses at ground level. So it was evidence of a real Iron Age town. So, you know, that's why I think, as some people suggest, the hill forts may have been used as a place of refuge. You know, when the town's getting attacked, you can all run up the hill into the hill fort and lock the gates.
And I think the castle, I read something that may have been part of its use, although it was ceremonial and it was a sort of meeting place when they were sort of, there was a threat in the area from another tribe and they would leg it up the hill.
But I can see it, you know, being maybe a civic centre, like we have in more modern times, a place where people go for certain tasks. Could have been ceremonial place. Yeah. Who knows? But they are fascinating structures. And the level of effort required to dig them out was huge. So the whole community was united and committed to building these structures. And the length and breadth of the country.
Funny enough, the Scottish example, he was, I don't know whether he calculated it himself, but he sort of proposed the idea that it would have taken this particular, it's called, is it Howden Mott, I think, Mott, Mott and Bailey, Howden Mott. It's up near Hoyk and Selkirk, that direction. And he was suggesting that as few as 20 to 30 people could have built that over the space of a year.
Wow.
You know, sort of an organised team. So I don't know where he gets that from and whether there's any validity in that estimate, but that was... You'd think it'd be thousands, wouldn't you?
I guess you could do a calculation based on man hours.
Yeah.
But it's quite awe-inspiring. If I stand on the ramparts of Battlesbury, for instance, and just look at how deep they are and the size of them, they're enormous.
Yeah.
So you do get an impression that it must have been huge. But then when you think about something like the Wansdyke, and they're similar sized ramparts, which is much later, it's medieval. But I remember when we were talking to David Carson about it, he mentioned that because the Wansdyke was so long and, you know, extensive, that would have been a kingdom-wide effort to build that. There must be some way of calculating the man hours.
And of course, on the subject of Wansdyke, you and I were chatting to David Carson on WhatsApp the other day, and the results of their investigation are due, well, he thought sometime in the spring, didn't he, in terms of trying to definitively date.
To put that into context, we know that there was a team from, it was UCL, I think, archaeologists from UCL went up and did some work on the Wansdyke with a view to using, what's it called, luminescence dating. So the same technique that was used to date the Kernabas giants, they're going to use to date the Wansdyke, and for the first time we should have a definitive date for the Wansdyke construction, which we've not had before. In fact, there's very little published information on the Wansdyke.
And it's not just the date, it's also why it was built. So from the date they can then make assumptions as to why it was built, because there are three hypotheses around, you know, what the Wansdyke was built for. So by dating it, it might clear that one up as well.
And speaking of the Wansdyke, we were up there the end of last summer filming with David Carson, who farms around there. And that video, I've nearly finished it. So we might have released it next week.
Unless you edit that comment out, that's now out.
Yeah.
That's another, that's been another labour of love, isn't it?
Yeah. These things that we end up overcommitting ourselves to.
Yes.
Oh, I've got several more of those coming up this year, but we won't get into that.
No, no.
So before we go into the main talk, the other thing is I finally got around to dropping off the Hidden Wiltshire books to the library yesterday.
Oh,
I believe they're being catalogued today, so should go into the library system soon. So if you choose to read books through the library system, they will be in Wiltshire libraries soon, imminently. But of course, you can still buy one from the website, hiddenwiltshire.com/shop.
Yeah, we had a sort of real flurry around Christmas for obvious reasons. Sold a lot then, but it's inevitably it's died off a little bit since Christmas. Yeah. So dig deep, folks, and get your orders in.
We need to do some marketing, I think.
Yeah, otherwise the lights will go out.
I was almost burnt out after getting all those orders out over Christmas. I thought I'm not doing anything in January now. So
it is really time consuming, isn't it? Bundling them up.
Yeah, it is.
And then sending out replacement books because we didn't put the right postage on.
Oh, don't get started on that. I had some returned to me by Royal Mail. It's just nuts. They didn't reach their destination, and a month later they got put back through my door. So it's a nightmare.
As you and I talked about, my brother was one of my youngest brother was one of those. Waited a month, and then eventually got a card through the door saying, "You owe us £1.50 from Royal Mail." So he paid his £1.50 and asked them to deliver it again. Nothing for about a week, 2 weeks, and then it arrives in your letterbox.
I know. You paid £1.50 for it to be returned to me. Well, kick in the teeth.
Absolutely. It's about kicking a man when he's down. Anyway, we've learned our lesson there.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of this nonsense. Let's get on to the main talk.
Yeah.
So this week we're going to actually talk about the very thing that I talked about at the Bratton History Association, which is Wiltshire's blind houses.
I think this is going to be a monologue because this was your talk. So
it was.
But I'm going to sit back and enjoy the ride.
So all those people, all of our listeners in Bratton who are at the talk now are going to think,
can switch off. They can switch off now.
I've already heard this. But anyway, we'll persevere because actually at least one person on Twitter did ask whether my talk to the Bratton History Association was recorded because she would be very interested in hearing it. So I said to her, it wasn't, but just watch this space because we'll stick it on a podcast. So
at least one person would be happy anyway.
Yeah. Now, the only issue is when you're doing a talk in front of people and you have a set of slides with a projector, you can actually show pictures of the things.
Yeah.
So it's a bit different to doing it on a podcast. So if you are, you know, or if you have access to a PC or a computer or any sort of multimedia device while you're listening to this, there is an article on the website called Blind Houses. So you can have a look at it and look at the pictures as we talk along. And actually, if you search on Google for blind houses, my article comes up first. Number one hit.
Yeah, it does. Because I was doing that yesterday. I was doing a bit of at least I would have something to say whilst you were talking. And I Googled Wiltshire blind houses and bosh, there it was. Wiltshire, number one.
Blind houses were...
sorry, just before you carry on.
Yeah.
So the photographs on the blog, and I meant to check, are all the photographs that you used in the slideshow at Bratton, are they on that blog? Or are there some
most of them.
Okay.
Most of them. There was a couple that I took screenshots from Google Maps and stuff like that, like the Devizes one and the Chippenham one. But yeah, I mean, most of the photos are there. But let me just explain what these are. So the blind houses are the village lockups that date back to the 18th century. So from the sort of 1700s on. And we have quite a lot of them in Wiltshire. I think there's 14 remaining. But they're very distinctive buildings, and most of them that still exist have been transferred to the ownership of parish councils. And virtually all of them are Grade 2 listed now, so they do have some protection. And architecturally, they're quite interesting. They do stand out. And, you know, a lot of the towns that have them are quite proud of them. So Shrewton, for instance, where you live, has got a picture of the blind house on the village sign as you enter the village.
Do you know what? I'd never noticed that until you posted that. I've only lived here 26 years.
So most of the village, except Paul, are quite proud of their blind house.
Well,
because it's on the village sign.
I mean, I probably pass it most days, but yeah, I was a bit embarrassed about that.
Yeah, but these blind houses were built at a period of time when local areas were getting a little bit fed up of the vagrancy and the vandalism and things like that and petty crime. So they wanted to have a bit more structure around catching and detaining people and then getting them in front of a magistrate to get punished. Now, this was in the period before there were police forces. So the police forces came into being in the sort of mid-1800s. I think in Wiltshire, our county constabulary was established in 1839. And after that, over the next few years after 1839, say from the 1850s onwards, you started to have police stations built. They fell into misuse from the sort of 1850s onwards, and either were demolished and eventually forgotten or repurposed and used for different things and eventually adopted by the local towns as a sort of civic building. And most of the ones in Wiltshire are really architecturally interesting. They have a certain style. You can see that people back then took a lot of pride in civic buildings. You can imagine someone building a sort of village lockup now. It'd be a sort of prefab thing they just shove up with a tin roof. Whereas these are like proper stone, solid built lockups. It's just a shame that they, eventually fell out of use because they just weren't needed anymore.
No.
And I know that when I looked at, I think there was a write-up in the Historic England citation for Shrewton, and this is what, talking about the Catherine Wheel, this really puzzled me, because the Historic England citation for Shrewton says, the blind house on the bridge, formerly listed as a lock-up 30 yards west of the Catherine Wheel. And at the time, when I said this in the Bratton History Association talk, I said, no idea what the Catherine Wheel is. Hmm. And a couple of people came up to me afterwards and said it was a pub.
Yeah.
They say it's circa 1700, dressed limestone walls and roof, round plan, single story. One narrow planked and studded door, two loopholes, one on either side of the rear, plat band at eaves level, dome stone roof with ball finial, not in original position, and reconstructed after 1945. So it was moved, the Shrewton Wheel.
That's right, yeah.
So I think initially it was closer to the main road, which was eventually built, but people kept crashing into it.
That's right, yeah.
So,
well, that whole stretch of road, we don't want to talk about shooting all the time, but there was a guy in the village who sadly died some years ago, Harry Withers, who had a fantastic collection of old photographs from the village and surrounding areas. I mean, he had hundreds and hundreds, and it was absolute goldmine of memorabilia. And he had photographs, and others had photographs of that road past the blind house there, heading sort of my direction, heading east towards Salisbury. And there was quite a lot of buildings very close in, because that's quite a wide open road now. In fact, that's one of the big problems we have here. It's so wide, it's like a runway, so people sort of catapult out of the roundabout and go hurtling up the road at crazy speeds. But it would have been much more hemmed in years gone by, and quite a few of the buildings that were close to the road were demolished by lorries that would come down the steep hill by another old pub, which is no longer there, the Royal Oak, and they would come down that steep hill, and the brakes were no good in those days, and they would lose control, and there was a couple of beautiful old sort of cob thatch cottages right close by the road that were just destroyed by great big lorries. I mean, this is going back probably, I don't know, the 50s or the 60s, if not before, but these cottages were destroyed. So the blind house was similarly located, very close to the road. And then I think it was hit by a lorry in 1945 and pretty much demolished. And then later on, with, you know, increased army activity and bigger army vehicles, it was in some peril being so close to the road. And that's when they moved it back to where it is now. It's still actually quite close to the road.
Yeah.
The pavement there is not very wide. In fact, it's crazily narrow.
Yeah. But anyway. I believe it got hit by a tank at one point in the war.
Yeah, that's so right.
The poor thing, it just probably needed some care and attention, so they just moved it brick by brick. And I did track down a photo on the internet of it in pieces with the bricks all numbered.
Yes, I saw that.
As they worked out how to put it back together again, a bit like a jigsaw puzzle.
But they changed the roof, didn't they? So the roof is like a, I think it was either a steeper pitch before or it's a steeper pitch now, but they changed the pitch of the roof.
Yeah. But I think that the first blind house I noticed when I moved to Wiltshire was the one in Hilperton. And I just noticed its distinctiveness. It reminded me very much of the one that I, because I come from the Liverpool area, the one that I remembered when I was growing up was the one that's in Everton. They call it Prince Rupert's Tower because that's on the Everton Football Club crest on the badge. And I saw this one in Hilperton. I thought, oh, that looks like one of those things from Everton. And I realised it was a blind house. And then I started seeing more of them. So there's one on Trowbridge, in Trowbridge by the river. There's one on Bradford-on-Avon on the bridge. There's, and Steeple Ashton's got one. They're all over the place. And quite a lot of them are quite similar in architecture, but some are very different. We'll talk about some of those ones in a moment. But
Sorry to interrupt, but there are others that have also been repurposed. So the building is sort of vaguely still there, but you would never know it was a blind house until you look back. So, and I'm thinking of Amesbury in particular, in the centre of Amesbury on the High Street. And I saw a photograph of it, that the building when it was a blind house, and it's now, I think it's an estate agent.
Yeah.
And the building, it's clearly the same building, it's the same shape, but there's no sort of sign that it was ever a blind house. And I certainly never knew it was a blind house.
Yeah, and that's not on the sort of the unofficial list of 14. So there may be others. And some of them ones that are on the list are slightly strange. So the one in Devizes is actually attached to the back of the town hall. It's not a standalone. Mm. The one in Chippenham is actually inside another building. I can't remember the name of that. What was it called? Yeld Hall. That's a building in Chippenham that dates back to around 1450 and is part now of Chippenham Museum. So when that building is open in the summer months, you can go inside it and go and see the blind house in there. But most of the ones we're going to talk about here are the ones that you can actually see and get to. There is one that is standalone, but you can't get to because it's now in someone's driveway. That's in Warminster.
Oh, yeah, behind that gate.
Yeah, behind that gate. And they've done a good job at kind of restoring that, but you can't go in it. But the ones that have been adopted as sort of civic buildings by the parish councils, they often open them once a year for heritage open days.
Yeah.
So the one in Trowbridge, I've actually been inside. And it's quite strange, actually, because the one on Trowbridge, it looks quite squat. But to get into it, you go down some steps. And actually, it's got some depth to it. When you go inside, the ceiling is really high. And it's got two jail cells, sort of two iron beds, a toilet that basically is just an outlet into the river. I mean, it's grim. I mean, there's no... This is the other thing. They're called blind houses because, generally speaking, they don't have windows. So when you're inside, you're blind. You can't see anything. It's just dark, pitch black. There is an exception to that. The one in Bradford-on-Avon does have windows. I'll explain why when we get onto that one. But the Trowbridge one was, built sort of early 1700s. I think there is a brick inside it which has a date on. I think it's 1758. So it's either 1758 or prior that it was built. That area where the Trowbridge one is was a kind of, it was almost like the public shaming area because you also had stocks there.
Oh, yeah.
you had there was reference to a ducking stool as well at one point. So they used to duck women into the river. This is where it gets.
Yeah, are you going to read that quote out?
We're going to. Shall I read the quote out?
Yeah,
this is apologies to all of our lady listeners, but this is a good example of how progress has been made in terms of equality between the sexes, because this is quite outrageous. But what they used to do to women, but I'll read it out. I think the stocks and the pillory go back as far as 1615 in terms of references. But there was a newspaper report about the ducking stool from a couple of hundred years ago, and I'll just read it out. And the ducking stool was used to punish ladies for being found guilty of being a scold or shrew. If she used her tongue to the disturbance of her husband's peace of mind, or her Ten Commandments, which is actually fingernails, to the detriment of his countenance, she was solemnly led forth, fastened securely on the stool, and thoroughly ducked or dipped into the water. And this would be repeated until she expressed contrition. So she came out of the water still kicking and screaming. They dunk her back in again.
So, that seems fair enough. No, I didn't mean that.
So the ducking school's gone. The stocks were there till around 1857, I think. Yeah. But once the police station was built, I think the police station in Trowbridge was built in 1854. There was no need to keep the blind house and it fell out of use. It was occasionally used to house vagrants overnight. So, and I've got some of this information from the Trowbridge Civic Society, so credit to them. But a police report from 1864 tells how a young man from London was put in the blind house with a rug to wrap himself in. In the morning, he was given a loaf and P.C. Dalymore was detailed to see him out of the town. Dalymore noticed that the tramp had torn off part of the rug to wrap his bread in, and for that, he got 2 months' hard labour. So just a double kick in the teeth.
Absolutely. And then transported to Australia.
So if we have any Australian listeners with a connection to Trowbridge, they may have been in the blind house.
Yeah.
Who knows?
They were harsh in those days, weren't they?
They were. But the blind house, it's amazing it still survives, because the roof has been taken off a couple of times. Once there was a riot in Trowbridge in 1826 to protest about the price of potatoes, and the leader of the riots was incarcerated in the blind house. So the rioters went over to the blind house, whipped the roof off, and dragged him out so he could carry on rioting.
Take the door off and take it from that way.
But apparently, also in 1942, the roof was blown off. There was a German bomb dropped in Trowbridge, and it blew the roof off. And they eventually stuck it back on in 1950. And the town council eventually took it on in the 1970s. And I think they restored it in 1977 for the Jubilee celebrations. Quite what the Queen would make of an old jail cell being refurbished to celebrate her Jubilee, I don't know. But anyway.
She could incarcerate her loyal servants from the Houses of Parliament in there.
Yeah, a few of them probably need to be...
Yeah, I can think of one or two. But...
Stick him in the blind house. Bring back the blind house. And let's be equal and introduce a ducking stool for men as well as women.
Absolutely.
Stick a few of them on that. Stick him in the River Thames.
Bit of equality.
Oh, dear. But one thing that's interesting about the blind houses is the adornment on the top. So on the top, there's a great big stone ball on the Trowbridge one. And in the 1800s... That ball was kind of, it's called the Knob, and they used to call the local youth gang the Knobs, and they'd have scraps with the Bradford-on-Avon teenagers who were called the Gudgeons, because their adornment at the top of the Bradford-on-Avon blind house was a gudgeon fish. It's a weather bay,
right.
Metal.
Yeah.
It's still there, you can see it. So you can imagine the Knobs and the Gudgeons were scrapping it out on a second night.
You know, I did wonder whether that reference to Knobs was anything to do with, because it then took me into a Google search for Dorset Knobs.
Yeah.
So, you know, the biscuit or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so I Googled that, and it's no connection at all. But then I saw that apparently there is a, you ever had a Dorset Knob? They're disgusting. They're really awful.
But careful, we might have some daughters.
Oh, I know. Well, my brother and sister will love them. But until recently, there was a thing called a Dorset knob throwing competition.
And
it became so popular during sort of lockdowns and things. They had to ban it because too many people came up. So the record for throwing a Dorset knob is something like 96 feet. And they've had to,
oh my God.
They've had to cancel the competition. But anyway, that's a complete red herring because it's got nothing to do with the knobs you get on top of blind houses.
Okay. Back to blind houses.
Back to blind houses.
So the Bradford and Avon one is on the bridge. Very distinctive. It looks architecturally quite similar to Trowbridge. It's kind of got this square construction, which is, there's a few blind houses that have that sort of square construction. You've got the one in Laycock, which is bolted onto the tithe barn there in Laycock. It's very similar. And the one in Box is quite square as well. But the Bradford and Avon one got me puzzled because there are many references to it previously being a chapel. Now, I believe there was definitely a chapel on the bridge before it was rebuilt in the early 1700s. And there are many references to that chapel. John Aubrey mentions it as a chapel in his writings around 1660 to 1670. So there was definitely a chapel. So this building was probably, when they rebuilt the bridge, they thought, let's stick the chapel back on. And eventually it became a multi-use building, which was repurposed as a blind house. But it's still got the old medieval windows in it. So it's one of the rare blind houses that has windows in it, which is interesting, very different. There was a rumour once that the founder of Methodism, John Wesley, was incarcerated in the Bradford-on-Avon blind house on the bridge. But apparently that's been debunked. My understanding is John Wesley did visit Bradford-on-Avon many times in his preaching tours. And I think it was one of his fellow preachers who was in prison there, William Hitchens, I think it was, stuck in there for one night. I don't know what he'd done to offend people, but they slung him in the blind house for a night.
another pissed vicar.
Yeah, it's just... Oh dear. But
with apologies to Andrew Rumsey if he's listening to this.
yes indeed. But I think that there was a pilgrim route that went through Bradford-on-Avon. If you go up to the top of the Tory, there's a chapel up there at the top of the village, at the top of the town, called St Mary's Chapel, I think it is. And that was an old sort of hermitage that was on the pilgrim routes to Glastonbury at one point. And I think there was one on the town bridge which would also have been used for hermits as they're travelling on these pilgrimages. Yeah, fascinating story. But the once it was repurposed, it was just a single jail cell. And I think in the 1800s, they restored it and converted it into two jail cells. So there's two jail cells when you go in now. Again, it's open. Trowbridge and Bradford-on-Avon, they definitely open those at least once a year for the Heritage Open Days. You can go inside and have a look. And if you search on YouTube, there is a good video clip of someone being shown around the blind house in Bradford-on-Avon. It's really interesting because it's one of the few that's got the interior that's still quite intact. It's got the quite well-preserved iron beds and the iron toilet that dumps straight into the river.
To the river, yeah. How many beds in there?
Two.
Right.
Well, there's two cells, one bed in each cell, from memory. But now you've asked me that question, I'm not convinced. But yeah, it's now owned by, or it's been transferred to the town council, I believe. Interesting thing about the bridge at Bradford-on-Avon, you can see one of the arches is from the original version of the bridge, and it's a slightly different shape. So you can see that, you know, the bridge that was there before, and they've kept part of it. And if you look underneath, you can see how they've widened it. It's quite interesting. I must do a bit more research about that. Have you ever been in the blind house?
Well, I was thinking that just now. I'm pretty certain I've been in the Shootant one. But I was thinking, well, I can't remember when it was last opened or I was aware of it being opened.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that they periodically open that one up. I suppose a big problem there is that if people sort of drive to it, because there's nowhere to park in Shootant.
Yeah, it's a bit different. So the ones that are in the towns are a bit easier to accommodate visitors. But there's one that's quite similar in shape to Trowbridge and the Bradford one is the one in Box. That's quite a grand looking one, and actually it's just on the edge of the pub car park. So I could just imagine how close this was to the pub. So for the
dead
the drunks, it's not too far to travel, is it?
That's right.
Stumble out of the pub after a night on the beers and then get arrested and shoved in the blind house.
Out of one door in the next. It's like I did on Christmas Eve. Fell out of Stuart's house after drinking whiskey and fell into my...
I'm surprised you didn't end up in the shroot and blind house.
Or the River Till.
So I found this about the written about the Box one. This is from the Box People and Places website. After a police house was established in the village at 24 Fairmead View, the building became redundant and fell into disuse. Parish Council minutes for November 1906 record a request to the County Council to transfer ownership of the blind house to the parish for use as an office for the assistant overseer or as a mortuary. In 1944, it was reported as being in use within the memory of older Box residents. One anecdote was that it was nearly burnt down when three inmates were held there. They started to smoke and caught fire to the bedding on the bench. So it's a miracle it's still here, really. I think it did eventually come under the control of the pub, or the, I think it was the brewery, actually. And Courage Brewery eventually gave it to the parish council in 1978. So it's preserved for future miscreants and drunks.
Actually, I wonder whether these are sort of uniquely British, you know, blind houses. I do remember looking at a building in the Dordogne in France. We were going down to have lunch at a village, and we stopped on the way at this little town, and there was a what I thought was a blind house. It looked all the look of a blind house, but it turned out to be, I think, some sort of something to do with electricity. I think it was to do with EDF electricity, but it's got me thinking, well, maybe it may be repurposed. Maybe it had been a blind house centuries ago.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because after I'd done the talk, James Archard mailed me with a picture of this brick structure that he'd found near Haywood. And he said, do you think this could have been a blind house? And we did a bit of research on it, discovered it was built in the late 1800s. So it was after the police forces had been established. So it's unlikely to have been a blind house. But actually, I took a walk up to it yesterday to have a look. And it's very small. I suspect it might be housing a well or a water pump of some sort. But I don't know for sure. But it's got signs from the parish council on the front. So I guess the parish council would know it. So I'll drop them an email. And there was another one that someone raised on the Facebook group. I can't remember where it was. It was over the other side of Wiltshire. It was that sort of, it was like a circular, a round one with a circular roof, which I think you'd mentioned you'd stopped there at one point and did a pee behind it.
That's the water pumping station.
The water pumping station.
Wexcombe.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yes. Yeah, I've stopped there more than once.
I think many people have just stopped.
Yes, and it looked like people have spent even longer there. I won't go into the gory details.
But that one at Wexcombe, it does look like the sort of traditional blind house.
Yeah, it does, but it's not. It's a pumping station.
But there are a couple of, I mean, we've talked about the ones that are quite similar. There are a couple of round ones, Shrewton's the round. The Hilburton one is kind of octagonal, as is the Steeple Ashton one. The Steeple Ashton one is really picturesque. Yeah, it's on the green there opposite the pub. Looks really nice.
What about HB one is that? I can't remember. I have taken a photograph of it. I can't remember if it's
round or not. Hexagonal, I think.
Hexagonal. Right.
Yeah, that's a very different structure to the others.
Yeah.
It's got a slate roof. It doesn't have a sort of stone dome structure. It's slate. But I think the village used that. I think the one in Hatesbury was refurbished. I think it was around 2007. They got some funds together from English Heritage contributed as well. But it's I think that village uses it around bonfire night because it's said in the Wiltshire Times that they have a Guy Fawkes competition amongst the village children, and the winner, apparently the winning guy, gets locked in the blind house before being extracted and carried through the streets in a procession. It sounds very
fantastic,
very good. But yeah, it's a very different structure. But the other structure, which is very different, is Bromham. The one in Bromham, it's kind of built into the wall and has a sort of wooden upper. And I think today they use that to house the village nativity.
Yeah.
So good to see it being reused for a noble purpose.
The one in Laycock, and you mentioned this, it appeared, or a blind house appeared in the TV series Cranford, which I've never seen.
Yes.
But I don't know what that is, but what was that all about? Because the Cranford one looks like the one at Steeple Ashton.
Yeah, the Cranford one was purpose built as part of the film set on the High Street in Laycock. So you can't see it now, but when I looked at a photo of it, it looked identical to the one at Steeple Ashton. So I think they've used that as a sort of inspiration for the Laycock one.
Do you know where it is? The one that was built for the film set.
No.
It's now in a West London housing estate.
Is it?
Yeah. It's just sat on a green outside a block of flats by the looks of things.
Oh, we need someone to go and do a pilgrimage and take some photos of it. But apparently in Cranford, someone got incarcerated in that blind house for stealing an orange. Yeah. Poor person.
Too right.
But yeah. But yeah, that's kind of a quick overview of Wiltshire's blind houses. Fantastic, interesting.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's really interesting.
Structures.
Yeah.
Okay, I guess we can wrap up.
Yes. Yeah. Blimey, look at the time.
So what are we going to be doing in 2 weeks?
Oh, no idea.
Say this every week.
Yeah.
We'll find something.
Yeah. I mean, we've got what was plan B for today, so we could always do that. So we'll keep people on their
toes,
on tenterhooks, waiting for that one. But yeah, we'll find something. We'll have a couple of things to talk about by then.
So
thanks to Steve Dixon. So I'm shuffling papers everywhere now. Thanks, Steve Dixon, for the music at the beginning and the end and the middle bit. It just had to be Holger the Can Man. What else could it be? So being in the can, obviously being in prison, is that an Americanism? I don't know, but
I think so. Yeah.
So thanks, Steve, for the bits of music. Show notes will include references and links and stuff. It's the newsletter. Are you going to do another of those anytime soon?
Yes.
Not that you've got anything else to do?
Yes, probably the weekend I'll stick something out.
So you can subscribe to that on the website. And of course, if you want to buy the Hidden Wiltshire book, there's still a few left. So get on and onto the online shop on the website and you can order it on there. Are any of the old books still available in there? I know you had that reprinted.
I've got 9 left.
Oh, blimey. That's going better than the second one.
Well, I didn't print as many of the
Okay.
It was just a small
run. Yeah.
But yeah, I've got 9 of the first book left.
Actually, it's nice to see the number of people ordering both books.
Yeah. You can still order both as well.
Yeah.
Some people have done.
Great. Russell, papers. I think that's it, isn't it?
That's it. So we shall be back in 2 weeks' time with another Hidden Wiltshire podcast. In the meantime, thank you for listening and goodbye.
Bye for now.